Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
That's why we play Tron decks in Modern, right? To cast Artie Shovelhead.
It's a clone of Magic, but it wasn't. Everything was different.
When Brainstorm came out in Conspiracy, that was like a $60, $70 foil.
Be the fact those packs are going to be $10 a pop, at least.
Now let me just walk you through this 60 cards of absolute ecstasy here. Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host, I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
It's doing okay today.
And we have a special guest this week. Greg, do you want to introduce our guest?
So my special guest is one of my best friends I've been playing Magic with for too long, and that is a Mr. Andrew.
Hi, everyone.
How's it going, Andrew? Andrew, you are our second ever guest on the show. Do you know who the first guest was?
No, I do not.
The first guest was actually Greg.
Yeah, I was a guest. That's right. And then Nick became a guest when we recorded, and then, yeah.
Yeah. Well, guests are few and far between, so it's very prestigious. Congratulations, Andrew. Welcome to the club.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, we also wanted to remind you that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where you can order Magic singles, sealed product, other such games. And if your order is over $10, be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to get yourself 10% off of your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways, which we are going to reveal some of the prizes for at the end of this episode. Surprise, surprise. So why don't we go ahead. Actually, you know what? Before we get too deep into this, we have a guest. Let's talk about what Magic we've played this week. Greg and Andrew, what Magic have you guys played this last week?
You know what? I'm a horrible person. I have not played a lick of Magic this entire week.
Shame. For
hey,
shame,
hey,
Greg.
Hey. It was President's Day weekend. I had to work.
This is true.
I did
this
play Zombicide yesterday, though.
Okay.
That wasn't too bad.
Interesting. Andrew, did you get any games of Magic in this last week?
I'm trying to think the last time I played some Magic, and it's been, I'll go with a bit too long. A bit
okay.
too long.
I don't know.
Fair.
It's been a couple weeks. I got you to play, I think.
You know, it's funny. Being on the content creation side of this, sometimes you just don't end up getting as many games in as you can. You know what I actually did? While I didn't play any real games of Magic, there was a new store that opened up not 5 minutes from my house, which is exciting. It's a very small operation. It's called Dungeons and Flagons. You can actually follow them on Facebook if you want, but I met the owner. They've been there for a little over a month, and they're doing this really cool thing where if they don't have their own singles collection, but if you walk in, you can actually give them your singles, and they'll put them in their case and sell them and take about 10% of whatever you sell. So it's a pretty cool operation. I'm probably going to be taking part in that a little bit, but so it's pretty cool. Nice new LGS. They'd have a lot of they do Dungeons and Dragons. They're actually going to be having some console gaming tournaments with consoles all the way from PS4 back to Super Nintendo. So
what? No NESs?
I don't know if they have an NES. I'll have to check on that, but okay. Obviously, if you guys have your LGSs, go out, show them some love, go and participate in some events, because they are what keep this game alive and kicking for those of us who don't go out and play Grand Prix or SCG events. But anyway, all right, well, let's move on. We have a couple story things to go over this week, so without further ado, let's head into Lore Corner. So we got a couple interesting things this week here. Greg, do you want to tell us a little bit about Rivals of Ixalan alternate endings?
Yeah, so as you guys already know, we had the end of the story last week with mechanical dinosaurs. We're going to have Planeswalker Betrayal at Ebola's Caliber. But you also know at the very end, we had the Sun Empire taking Orozca for themselves. And that happened because of the social interaction and geocaching events held worldwide, where you, the player, and us, the player, we, the players, decided on who took Orozca after everybody left. And then we'll decide to come back at some point, hopefully.
Right.
So they're real short blurbs, so we're not going to go too in-depth on them. Starting out, you have Tishana of the River Heralds. And if the River Heralds had won, Tishana would have decided that humans are fickle and would not be worth trying to make peace with, and she will make Orozca her own. Take the river that flows through it, make it the life spring of Ixalan, and just say, that's mine. I'm going to use it. So the plan was she got her shapers and renames Orozca the City of Life Water.
Ooh. And she does close out by making the note, we were here first.
Yep.
So, kind of getting that extra little jab in there. And then, if we had the Legion of Dusk, everyone's favorite bloodsuckers who would have won the vote, we have Vona, Elenda, and Mavren Fane heading back to Torizon, and Mavren Fane, of course, is, you know, apologetic to Elenda, you know, I'm sorry, blah, 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 blah. And Vona's just like, ugh, pathetic. And Vona's like, hey, you know what? Screw these guys. I'm going to go back. I'm not going to return to Torizon empty-handed. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to take Orozca. It's going to be ours for the Legion of Dusk, and I'm going to be the one to save the day and conquest, conquer, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So she runs out back to Orozca by herself, gets there, and is like, ha-ha, a butcher for a queen. It's mine. And she didn't care. The city was hers and hers alone, except something rumbled behind her. And so she whirled around, and she gasped, and then above her stood an immense dinosaur that just eats her. And Orozca was quiet once more.
Yay!
So sad, too bad for the vampires. But then we also have the Brazen Coalition. We begin with revenge! Rescue mission, revenge! And Malcolm and Breeches are soaring high above the spires of Orozca. And, you know, they're saying, we gotta find the captain! We gotta find him! And they see that Orozca is empty, and everyone has gone. And they kind of touch bases on the fact that Jace did communicate with them telepathically and let them know, you know, thank you, you know, we'll see you again soon. But they're like, wow, that was just sort of anticlimactic. All right. And Malcolm goes, everyone went home? And Breeches goes, everyone but us. So a week later, you see Azor's Sanctum littered with tables full of ale and playing cards and pirate songs. So the Brazen Coalition essentially turns Orozca and Azor's Sanctum into their own little tavern. Another, what was it? High and dry, if you will. So gold, ale, and cards has become the fate of Orozca when the Brazen Coalition succeeds. And I can't help but think that this was maybe Wizard's thought of the fan favorite, because obviously you've got Jace and Vraska, main characters of the story, as part of the Brazen Coalition. But, you know, the Sun Empire did win out, so that was what we heard first. But it is fun to see that if the Brazen Coalition had won, we kind of have a humorous ending towards Orozca here.
There's more, because when we left you guys last on the story, we had Jace planeswalking onto a skyship, being confronted with Gideon and this gray and red-haired woman in her mid-70s with a braided ponytail, calling him a bookworm. We talked about this. We're pretty sure it's Jaya. He went to Dominaria. But there was more. We wanted to touch on more information getting into when we're going back to Dominaria here so soon. I mean, we've got the magic story next month where they're going to start talking about Dominaria and the resurgence there. But there's a couple more characters that I think we wanted to touch on before we got there.
Right.
The first one being Joyra.
Yeah.
Well, third one, right?
All right, well then let's continue on to Joyra's story here. So Joyra was from the continent of Shiv, and she was part of the Gitu tribe. And she ended up studying at the Talarian Academy with a couple of our other friends, Teferi and Karn. So Joyra is an artificer, and early on in her time at the Academy, she actually, well, first of all, she was the one who gave Karn his name. Teferi had come up with some other ridiculous, condescending name for Karn, but Joyra was Karn's first real friend. And we can see this, and we'll probably see this blossom even further as we return to Dominaria in the future. But to begin, she actually befriended a person at the Academy by the name of Carrick. So Carrick is actually a Phyrexian sleeper agent. So Joyra was, when she was at the Talarian Academy, she kind of missed the sort of strong, savage men that she's used to back on Gitu. But, you know, it felt like a lot of the men from, or boys rather, from the Academy were rather immature, a la Teferi. So she ends up meeting this Carrick individual, and Carrick sort of uses Joyra, who has been sneaking out of the Academy periodically just to kind of get some air and explore. They start to develop a relationship, and Joyra starts to get feelings for Carrick. And so Carrick uses this to his advantage to find a way to break in and infiltrate the Talarian Academy. So per our previous story, if you're familiar, there was a Phyrexian invasion of the Academy, and this was these were some of the events leading to the initial invasion. So Joyra helps Carrick find ways to infiltrate and end up killing a whole bunch of people at the Academy through this invasion, which ultimately leads to Karn going back in time to save Joyra and the Academy from the Phyrexian invasion.
Since she did die during the invasion.
Right, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, Joyra does die during that invasion.
And Teferi's nickname for Karn was Artie Shovelhead.
That's right. Good old Artie Shovelhead, you know? That's why we play Tron decks in Modern, right? To cast Artie Shovelhead.
Yep.
You gotta dig sometimes. You gotta dig.
You gotta dig.
See where right. I get it from?
Yeah, right? Dig through Artie Shovelhead. Okay, so Joyra actually herself is nearly immortal due to the experiences at Talaria following the disaster.
Yeah, so you know why she's almost immortal.
Why is that, Craig?
Well, it's because she extracts water from the time bubbles from the time Talaria pretty much got destroyed with all the rifts and all the fun stuff that really happened to the fairy. She's drinking slow time water, which makes her age at a slower rate.
Right.
So, in all honesty, between the time that that happened and the time now when we're going back to Dominaria, probably her and Teferi have aged no more than a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, based on the art that we saw, the preview art for Dominaria, they don't look like they've aged much at all, while Jaya seems to be quite old.
Isn't it rude that they wouldn't share this magnificent discovery with anybody else on Dominaria?
It is rude. I mean, cast donate once in a while, why don't you? Please. Please. So Joyra was actually the first captain of the Skyship Weatherlight. And afterward, that quite a few excursions on the Weatherlight, which we may cover in a later episode, she returns to Shiv to oversee Power Stone production. So during the Phyrexian invasion, her homeland was phased out along with Teferi. So, you know, for protection purposes, Teferi's protection, to be specific. And she returns to Dominaria along with Teferi, who was trying to bring the phased out continents back safely and close the rifts that threaten the multiverse. Because, you know, time is a very sensitive
mistress.
Yeah, there you go. So it'd be best for the multiverse if they were to just clean up after themselves, put their stuff away neatly in little cubbies, and move on with their lives. In order for Joyra to feel more at ease with this task, Teferi summoned two Gitu warriors and two Vyashino to accompany them, as protection would be nearly irrelevant, granted that Teferi had nearly unlimited mana at the time and could easily shift their enemies into somewhere far away.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, that kind of is where we are left with Joyra. I mean, kind of a short story, but... very excited to see her involvement with the storyline as we move forward. She's very, very powerful. And if you're familiar with Joyra and her cards, she deals a lot with suspending and time counters. So are we going to see a resurgence of suspend coming with the introduction of Joyra back to Dominaria?
I mean, possibly.
I mean, ancestral vision?
Vanishing, all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Fading.
So this is really going to beg the question, what all is Wizards going to pack into its Dominaria section or set in terms of mechanics? Because there are a lot. There are quite a lot.
I hear they're packing a new board game.
They are packing a new board game. What board game is that, Greg?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it now. I'm going to have to find that. I'll bring it up in a moment.
More on that later. Who are you calling a moron? No. All right, well... that's going to do it, pretty much, for the lore corner of this episode, keeping it kind of short and sweet. So now what we would like to do is go over just a couple of brief news and announcements, some speculation. So let's head on into As Foretold.
So as we get here and we start casting spells with counters and cast them for free and breaking a game, the board game we were talking about is called Heroes of Dominaria, and that's all anybody knows.
No release date, no subject matter.
Summer 2018 says, take the role of a planeswalker traveling the lands of Dominaria in this all-new board game. It sounds like it might be a dungeon delve game, which could be exactly what they've been needing to do for a long time.
Yeah, one of my favorite games from when I was a wee lad was Hero Quest. Are you familiar with Hero Quest?
I do know of Hero Quest.
Okay. Andrew, you said yes. Have you played games like this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Too many of those games.
I mean, Massive Darkness, Descent, Imperial Assault, they're all kind of like that.
I would try desperately to get my family to play Hero Quest with me, and they were just like, oh, it's too complicated, it takes too much time. But oh my gosh, I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. Perfect combination of Dungeons and Dragons meets board game for me. So, and that was until I found Magic. But anyway, that's for another time and place. But so one of the hot button issues that has been discussed this week is at a recent Grand Prix, Gabriel Nassif was playing a black-red Hollow One deck against, oh my gosh, I can't remember this other person's name, but he was playing a Boggles deck. So the board state was such that Nassif had his opponent, I want to say it was around 11 life. It was more than 10, but it was a considerable amount. And he was planning this massive, massive attack because his opponent had a fully suited up Boggle with Daybreak Coronet, among other things. I mean, this thing was flying, it had lifelink, it had vigilance, it was huge. But he, Nassif, had out a Flameblade Adept, which has Menace. And so he spent his entire turn trying to buff up this Flameblade Adept by casting Faithless Looting, by, you know, just drawing and discarding cards, pumping them up as big as he possibly could. And he did not see that his opponent had a Dryad Arbor on the battlefield. Not only any Dryad Arbor, but this was a Dryad Arbor from the vault. What was it? Relics? Something like that? Something. Lore, maybe.
No, that's from the vault lands. Realm.
Lands. Okay, that makes so much more sense. But anyway, so he was he tried to swing in with his Flameblade Adept, thinking that all this guy had was his Boggle, because his Dryad Arbor that looked a lot like a forest was among his lands. And so what happened was his opponent blocked, double blocked rather, and Nassif was kind of taken aback. He didn't realize that this was a creature. And he picks up the card, looks at it, is kind of just like, what the heck? This is actually a creature. It's a Dryad Arbor. It looks like a forest. What the heck? Okay, I'm going to scoop. Let's go to the next game.
Yeah.
Well, Twitter kind of exploded for a minute. People were saying that Dryad Arbor from the vault should be banned. It doesn't really look like it, like the Future Sight version, which is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of nuts. I mean, Greg, Andrew, what would your take on something like this be?
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of a misrepresentation of board state, but then again, I'm the type of guy that when I play stuff, I announce the card I'm playing.
Even if it's a land?
I play an island. Oh, I'm playing in the snow in my mountains. Yeah, I always do.
Andrew, how do you feel about this?
When you get to the pro play, a lot of players, they don't announce. They'll maybe play, they'll play a card and they'll show it, and if it's your opponent's prerogative to take in the information that your opponent's providing you. I know for myself, when I play, when I have some type of mono dork that's out there, I usually end up sorting them down with my land, so they're going to kind of mix in there. I might try to keep them separate because it's not an actual land. I should probably rewatch the video to see what happened, but I mean, when the Dryad Arbor comes out, yeah, I mean, if you look at the art, it looks like it's a forest. You just look at the bottom right corner and it's a 1-1. But it is ultimately, it's your responsibility to know what your opponent's doing, so if they make a misplay, you're able to catch it. So it's a rough situation to be in, and a lot of people have put into rough situations in Magic and usually kind of have to say, well, was I really paying attention myself?
Right. Right. No, I completely agree, and I think that it is everyone's responsibility to announce what they play. I know I myself have played a lot of games where people shorten the names of the cards that they play. So if you were to play a Dryad Arbor, he might just say Arbor or, you know, something like that.
I don't know. That seems weird. But there could also be, when you're playing the GPs, there's always the possibility of a language barrier.
Well, they're playing in Europe. They're playing in France, I believe.
Yeah.
In Lyon. I mean, do the two players themselves, do they even share language?
I think they did. The opponent was a player called Thomas Langwalt.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, no, language barrier definitely does play a factor in this. But, Andrew, I think you're right in that it is the player's responsibility to know what the board state is. And that's part of the reason why you can take time during your turn to, you know, go in the tank, to think, to observe the board state, and to calculate out each one of your moves. And the fact that that version of Dryad Arbor looks like a forest, I mean, that's kind of on the players who play at a very high level to know what is in the meta and what people are capable of playing. So, I mean, we're not faulting anybody here, but we're just saying that, you know, don't explode and react such that, oh, this needs to be banned, because, you know, ultimately it is a card and it is playable, it is legal, but you do need to be aware of, number one, the deck you're playing against, and is it going to run a certain card, and then also, yeah, just make sure that you're announcing all your plays when you do, so that your opponent has all the necessary information to make his next move.
Well, and Magic does have, Wizards has put out rules for trying to have card knowledge for what's happening. When you are having, like, a Pithing Needle come out, and if you just say a certain card that as a general label, it's usually assumed, okay, you know which one that you're talking about, but if you ever don't know the actual information, there's usually a little bit of leeway, but you actually need to know what's going on. You can't just say, oh, I'm naming Jace with, like, a meddling mage. Well, there's so many Jaces that are out there, that's not enough information.
God, no.
Right, unless the card is Borborygmos. I mean, did you guys all hear about that incident?
What? No. Wait. What
okay, so
Borborygmos?
Someone actually did do this. They played a Pithing Needle and named Borborygmos. And once the player played Borborygmos enraged and activated its ability, the owner of the Python Needle said, nope, I named Borborygmos. And then he goes, judge, calls the judge, and the judge call, the official judge call was that he did not specify Borborygmos Enraged, and therefore Borborygmos Enraged was able to go off. So
that was that back in, well, the Return to Ravnica?
Yes, where, yeah, where I believe Borborygmos was from Gatecrash.
Right, and it was in Gatecrash, yeah. Because you mentioning that makes it come back to mind of, I think part of the issue for that being even brought up is that they're playing, like, standard at the time as well, where you'd be like, well, the card that he named wasn't even a legal card to name. So
right.
In that instance, it's like, well, if there's only one card, it could legally be in the format that we're playing.
Whoa. So here's something that's really awkward when we get into this. Even if we're playing standard, can you not name, say, Maze of Ith? I mean, it doesn't do anything, but you name a card. Doesn't
technically
have any relevance to what event format it's in.
Technically, in the Multiverse of Magic, when it says name a card, it is any card that's ever been named. You could name Black Lotus with your Python Needle if you so desire. However, I really feel, and it's kind of recently, we've seen a lot more of these judgment calls with judges, pun intended, that really start to like spark up some controversy and discussion, you know? Should there be some sort of clarification with judges on this front? Like, how do you make it consistent such that we don't keep revisiting these situations where it's like, well, it was all a judge call based on what the judge wanted and, you know, all this, that, and the other, you know? Or is this one of those preserving the integrity of the game, certain situations will happen and it's part of the charm of playing Magic the Gathering? Like, what do you think about that?
I don't know. It's kind of awkward because I feel like there are a lot of judges that do know what's going on and they know how to deal with it properly. But then there's a lot of other judges that are indifferent and don't care, and they kind of ruin it for everybody. I mean, we saw this last week or a couple weeks ago with the judge call on when guy was searching his deck and he hadn't taken his sideboard out from his last game, so game
the
one.
The Graft Digger's Cage, Witchbane Orb thing.
And then, so that was a flubbed call because the judge said, I don't know which one it should have been. And I'm like, that's irrelevant. The guy sleeved up his deck illegally. It wasn't an illegal deck. And
right.
I feel like the judge call there should have been, you're not representing a proper deck of what it should be, game loss. I mean,
right.
The guy still got a game loss for it, but I feel that because of how that judge responded to that, that could have been appealed to and a decision made differently.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
It's hard when you're really trying to put this on judges, though, because judges, they're in a way, they're an administrator of the game. The game ultimately
right.
is there for the players to be decided by the players. You hope that a judge is never needed. Just like in sport, a referee. The referees, they need to be there just because you need that officiation just
mm-hmm.
in case. But there's also plenty of times where it is a player trying to get something over on their opponent by
right.
misrepresenting themselves and just saying, oh no, it's my mistake, I wasn't meaning to do that.
But then there's
right.
this also awkward part right now where I feel that if judges were to get in there and all be on the same page, that requires some sort of training that's not done on a peer base, which would also mean that Wizards employs them and now they have to pay money to them. So,
that's a whole nother can of worms. Yeah.
It really is.
But,
it really is.
Yeah.
But that's something that's been ongoing in the background that we don't see.
Right, and I know I myself am not a judge. I do know a few judges. I know a couple level twos as well as level ones, and I mean, they all seem to have a common knowledge of the rules. It's just when it comes down to a judgment call where it's not a question of, you know, this rule, that rule, and the other. It's like, how did something go down? Like, what is really going to happen? Where it turns into more of a judgment call, and I guess that's the only excuse for variation in judge calls now. But yeah, I don't know.
Wait, we'll, usually when you get to a judge call, it's the game has gone to such a point where the players themselves can't fix it. And usually the players can't fix it because something has either gone out of control, somebody missed something. So ultimately the judge is needing to be there because something on the player's side, whether it's lack of knowledge or lack of observance, something has happened, whether it's a mistake or an inference, something along those lines. In which right. case, you want to try to bring in a third neutral party to try to help resolve the situation. And usually, because you're calling over a judge, somebody's not going to like what's going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
going back to this instance of, hey, it's a dryad arbor, it's like, well, sorry, bud, you didn't necessarily notice that this was a creature that's also a land? I mean, what can I really do for you there?
Yep. Yeah.
Do you want me to call him that he was misrepresenting game state and give him a warning? I mean, it won't do much.
But you can't really do that because if, like we were saying, you know, and Andrew even said, you put some mana dorks by your lands, and the only real adjustment they've made to coverage in the last, gosh, what is it, three or four years, is the fact that you have to have your lands closer to you and your creatures and other things away from you. And the fact that Dryad Arbor is a land creature makes it just really, it's walking that tightrope, you know, like,
yeah,
you can't really say you have to put it with your creatures or you have to put it with your lands. You just have to be aware of it so that, you know, you can game accordingly.
I mean, I imagine we're going to probably get some sort of talking to from Wizards about this because they always look at everything. But if you ask me, it'll probably be deemed that next time, put it in the creature spot. Because that way you know it's a creature.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's definitely up for discussion and debate, so...
Did you hear about this fan art policy?
No, I actually saw some link to an article about it, but fan art policy news. Greg, so, do go on.
Apparently what's been going on is more and more people are just getting in touch with their artistic self in Magic. So people are asking Wizards, hey, can I do this? Hey, can I do this?
Are you talking about altering cards?
No, I'm talking about making comics. I'm talking about making shirts, designing cosplays, doing their own stories, fan fictions where Rao and Jace are not the people they are, and other things like that. So they're getting them by the thousands every day. And, of course, their team cannot handle saying yes to all of these. So ultimately what they decided on doing is that they were going to come up with a fan policy where they would allow people to do whatever they want within reason. So what it really came down to is no person can take a fan art or any symbol Wizards and use it to make money. And I mean, we're talking like thousands of reproductions, because if you're going to take a likeness of Jace the Mind Sculptor, put it on a shirt and sell it, that's not revenue going to Wizards of the Coast, and they're going to give you a cease and desist because you're using intellectual property. But fan art's a little bit less of that, but ultimately they just needed to make some clarification for people so they would stop getting questions.
Sure, and that makes sense. I mean, it is property of Wizards of the Coast, and like you said, if you want to put Jace the Mind Sculptor on something and make money on it, that's not cool. But that's interesting. That's interesting that they would allow people to kind of just go and do whatever. I'd be curious to see if they give people a slap on the wrist before a full-fledged, you know, lawsuit if something were to actually...
Well, the slap on the wrist is cease and desist.
Gotcha. Okay.
What was the name of that space cube? Do you remember that?
Wasn't it just Space Cube?
I don't know. It was called something else. There was a few years back... during New Phyrexia, this group of people designed a draftable cube, but they changed everything. So it was all Magic, but everything got changed slightly so that it would be a... it's a clone of Magic, but it wasn't. Everything was different.
It was sci-fi.
I remember this, Greg. I walked in and saw people drafting this, and I was like, what is this?
How long ago was that?
I forget what it was called, but I asked them, what is this? And they said, oh, this is a game. It's just like Magic. And I said, really? And they go, yeah, like everything from the resources to even planeswalkers to abilities.
Before you get too far, don't name any names for this because there is a cease and desist. And if any copies are to be found, a lawsuit will follow.
That's true. Yeah, no, I don't even know who it was who was playing it, but I just remember seeing this and going, holy crap, this is just like Magic. So,
it really is.
Yeah, anything like that, I could definitely see them coming down really, really hard on.
Well, Wizards came in and bought or confiscated all copies of this game.
Yeah.
Because Wizards had actually said, hey, this is a thing. They said it online. It's like, this is really cool. And then they realized, oh, wait, this is just a complete ripoff of our own
game.
Our own game.
And then their lawyers got involved.
Yeah, you've thrown on different art and, like, different names for what's going on, and it's sci-fi themed, but it is Magic the Gathering with just reskin, and you are selling this. At that point, yeah, that probably needs to stop. It's not like it's a parody or anything. It is just the game.
Yep.
Right.
It got pretty, yeah. So they were like, yep, you're right. Okay. We do that. So.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Very, very interesting. Let's move on now and let's do a little bit of talk, and some possible speculation in regards to a new set that's coming out. We're all pretty well aware that Masters 25 will be coming out in March. And we have a couple of cards that have been previewed for it already. But let's talk a little bit about what we might expect to see coming out in this Masters 25 set. We already know that we have Jace the Mind Sculptor. We have Azusa, Lost But Seeking. We have Phyrexian Obliterator. And we have Murder. So...
Whoa. Don't kill the messenger.
No. Let's start by saying what this Magic Masters 25 is supposed to be. And it's supposed to be, Magic's been around for 25 years. So they wanted to do a set that included cards from each set of Magic throughout its 25 years of existence. So there are a couple of stipulations, a couple caveats. Obviously, we can't print anything that's on the reserve list.
Yep.
It has to be a draftable format, and it has to be somewhat efficient in terms of its EV or estimated value.
Be the fact those packs are going to be $10 a pop, at least.
Right. I mean, it seems like it's pre-ordering already at a Masters level, which seems fair. But I mean, Greg, Andrew, what do you think we can expect to come in this set, seeing as its MO is to be iconic in its production?
We talked about this before the show. I have a feeling that we're going to see cards that not only were strong in limited or constructed formats, but also things that are important to the story. So Glissa's Sunseeker is probably going to get a reprint out of Fifth Dawn, which was a weird little 3/2 first strike that destroyed artifacts equal to the amount of mana you have in your mana pool. Talk about
interesting.
Weird.
Yeah.
But it's story-wise. She was supposed to be a planeswalker but never got her spark. Or gave it up. She gave it up.
Okay, so you're mentioning the lore aspect here, where iconic cards in terms of Magic's lore would be included in here. That would be great. Now, it is kind of weird that we did have Iconic Masters come out this year, or this last year, I'm sorry, 2017. But they've got a lot of wiggle room in terms of what they're actually going to include. So 25 years of Magic's story, you know, that's definitely an aspect. We have Jace, who is a huge proponent of the story. But then you also have iconic cards in terms of, like, gameplay.
Oh, yeah. Things like Squadron Hawk.
Squadron Hawk, yeah. Yeah, Andrew, what's your take on some of these cards they might be able to bring back in terms of lore or gameplay?
Well, one of the themes that Wizards has released is that they're going to use it from any of the major releases, so they can even be pulling out things from Commander decks that haven't been reprinted, which is going to open up far too many options and variety for what can happen. It'll be really be interesting what they can pull out from sets. But as they've done with all these different Master series that have been reprinted, yes, they usually try to keep themes in what's going on. And if they're really going to try to expand the themes for overarching ideas, that'll be interesting. Are they going to have tribes? Are they going to try to have certain mechanics that maybe carry over into multiple different sets? And also, is it going to have some type of foreshadowing for going back to Dominaria in the next set?
Ooh.
There's just so much variety in what they can do. And just when they had Unstable coming out, think of how many things were goofy in that came out, that they still tried to make it be relevant in how Magic's being played now.
Right.
So when they start bringing things back from the past, they usually don't bring back cards that aren't good. They try to keep cards that are somewhat, maybe niche even, but I don't think you're going to see, like, Stang Twin getting reprinted in Modern in this set.
Like, oh, man.
It's one of those cards that are just like, yeah, it's a card. Yeah, it does something interesting. But is it really... And even to a point, Stang, I would say, is a somewhat iconic card. People know what that is if they've really been playing Magic for a while. Does it really need to get a reprint? Do new players really need to know what's going on here? Probably not.
Well, there's another thing of... I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, every single legendary creature from Legends is reserve list.
Every single one? Oh, interesting. Maybe.
I'm pretty sure. So maybe. They couldn't even reprint it if they wanted to. Now, Something like Juzum Jijin? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you've also got cards like Torwaki. Is Torwaki on the reserve list? I mean
maybe?
There's plenty of Legends cards that are on the reserve list, absolutely. But, I mean, we're speculating here on cards that are rare, you know? This set, you're going to have a handful of Mythics, you're going to have several Rares, but a bulk of this set is going to be made up of Commons and Uncommons. I mean, they might downshift some cards from Rare to Uncommon, or even Uncommon to Common. We've seen that with cards like Burning Tree Emissary.
I mean, but some of these may even get downgraded from Rare to Common.
Sure, but there's a lot of cards that, you know, it's going to be impossible, really, to consider all the Commons and Uncommons in Magic's existence, but it's going to be crazy how commons from this block of time work with commons in this block of time. But it really gives the development team a lot of space to work with. And it's almost like they get to create their own magical Christmas land in this one set of a limited format that could make people really excited to shell out $30, $35 a draft if it's a good draft experience.
40 usually.
40, sure.
Yeah, it's expensive. I don't know. If I wanted to draft, I'd probably go to like Channel and do their one and done where you get no prize support, but they do it for like $25.
Sure.
And you just get your three packs and draft, and that's it.
Right, but just shot out of a cannon right here, older sets a la Alpha Beta Unlimited, Revised, and whatnot, none of those commons and uncommons from that time period were printed with foil printing. Later on, obviously cards like Lightning Bolt have seen reprints in their foil now, but maybe this is an opportunity for them to take older cards that have never seen a foil printing at common and uncommon. I mean, look at Brainstorm. When Brainstorm came out in Conspiracy, that was like a $60, $70 foil
for
the first couple of weeks that it came out. But, I mean, you know, they're not going to be printing the dual lands, sad face. But if they reprint, you know, some commons and uncommons from, like, The Dark or Ice Age or Mirage, you could get some really interesting foil cards. Like a Rainbow Efreet. Actually, no, that was a rare, I think. But I don't know. I mean, you kind of see what I'm saying here? Do you guys agree or disagree?
No, definitely gives them the chance, but I'm willing to bet you one of the cards we're going to get from, like, Alpha is going to be Dark Ritual.
Okay. Well, all of a sudden, everyone's drafting Blue-Black Control.
So there's going to be some interesting things. Andrew brought up Standstill out of Odyssey as a neat uncommon, which if you don't remember that card, it was a 2-drop enchantment that says whenever a player plays a spell, that player's sacrifice Standstill and that player's opponent draws 3 cards.
Which was huge in mono blue control because, oh, you play a spell? Oh, I can actually counterspell that and still draw cards.
Yeah.
Right. Or, yeah, draw into that counterspell with the Standstill and then react.
Yeah. Oh,
that would be so sweet.
And that's from Odyssey, which, I mean, yeah, there's different things from Odyssey, but Standstill was a staple in control decks at that period of time. And you had a lot of really derpy control decks that did terrible things to the game of Magic of making it really, really slow. I remember correctly, there was a land control deck that ran Standstill with like Chimeric Idol and Avalanche Riders, and you're just punished by trying to play cards, which is something, though, that Magic has really tried to pull back from. Of, they're okay with counterspells because at least you're still trying to do something.
Could you imagine a reprint of Price of Glory?
That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that's also, Andrew, to piggyback off of that, that's part of the reason why they banned Leovold in Commander, right?
Yeah, that guy's busted.
It's just more of a reason to, you know, not want to play Magic anymore when you don't have a hand, you can't draw cards, and you just sit there and watch your opponent go off. That's no fun at all. Now, also, talking about commons and uncommons, the recent resurgence of Pauper may give Wizards a good idea of cards they might want to print in this set.
Downgrade.
Just because knowing that the Wizards design team and this whole Masters 25 thing kind of came out of nowhere. It was pretty recently developed. Do you think that with the success of Pauper over the course of the last year, you know, we could see some Pauper reprints that could, you know, help make that format more affordable if Magic, in fact, wants to start supporting Pauper as a format?
I mean, sure. But I still hold strong with my decision last podcast where Wizards is planning to develop a new modern and or extended format, and Modern's going to become the new Vintage.
Right. Right. I guess the real hot issue here would be, do you think we'll see a reprint of Oubliette in Masters 25?
I mean, probably. We could. I don't think it's reserveless.
Well, Wizards does have a tendency to respond to fan requests and social media. So with the Professor being very vocal about Pauper and the fact that some of these common cards from older sets that have no printings beyond the first one, I'd give it a greater than 1% chance that they're going to take some of these ridiculously priced cards and print them, you know, at common and uncommon. And because the market for Pauper cards is really only taken off within the last, like, I'd say 6 months to a year. Before that, you'd have cards that were common from these older sets worth next to nothing. And now that people are actually interested in them, there's a demand. So will Wizards meet that demand by printing some of these cards in the only set they can for the foreseeable future?
Yeah.
Well, Wizards usually is more reactionary, I would say, in what they do. If they may announce, hey, we're going to do Pauper, they'll see what really happens to the field, and then they would release a set to try to help people have access to cards that they can't necessarily get a hold of, or that are cards that need a reprint, because they are just that important to the format.
Okay, so here we go. I'm about to blow your mind. Here's Wizards' release schedule for this year. They're having Masters 25.
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting Commander Anthologies.
We're getting an Anthology too, but that's back in August.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's fine. I'm not going in chronological order here.
Okay.
We're due for another Eternal Masters set.
Yep.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that there's some other Master set in the works to be released this year.
No, that's going to be Battle Bond.
Okay, but basically all this coming back to what my point is, do you think that Wizards can create a Pauper Master set?
Probably not in the foreseeable future. Now, I mean, a From the Vault Pauper, sure.
Okay. Yeah, that actually might be better because...
How are they going to sell a From the Vault Pauper, though? They're going to be like, here's a $10 set with special packaging and new art.
I mean, it worked for From the Vault Transform.
Oubliettes are $50.
Yeah, but also, yeah, they're not going to do a Pauper Master set because based on principle alone, Pauper is an all-common set. Right. And you're not going to open a pack expecting to not see a rare. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. So
yeah, it'll be an awkward format to make it draftable. And I mean, every set is already Pauper playable.
Well, no, I think that Pauper could be one of the most draftable formats because you're taking out the randomization of rares and mythics and uncommons. You know, you're going to know kind of what you're in for if you have a set that's a specific size and what you can go in trying to draft.
But your consistency level is too high, so there's just this one deck that has to be played. And it's really hard to balance it, too. I mean, if you've ever made a cube, when you take out power and you take out rares and you go to make a Pauper cube, it is impossibly hard to balance.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Because, like, green and black and blue, you got these impossibly giant creatures and no way to kill them.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Which is why a card like Oubliette is so expensive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, speculating is fun. Boy, it sure is fun. But we're just going to have to wait and see, because I believe spoiler season for 25 starts this next week.
I mean, it might even start with us tomorrow.
It might.
Which, by the way, if you didn't know, we're recording on Thursday.
Ooh. We're breaking the fourth wall here on the Win Condition. Welcome. Welcome backstage. all right. Well, let's leave this segment here and let's wrap it up with we're going to talk decks. We're going to talk some brews. So let's head on over to the main phase. All right, so here in the main phase, we have quite a few decks to talk about, not only in Modern, but also Standard. Both formats seem to be in a pretty darn good place.
They do.
Where do you gentlemen want to start with Modern?
I'm down for Modern. I think there's more to talk about there, with Standard being like a few decks.
Well, Modern also, considering... we have the online events and the most recent event in Leon. The ban list being different and the difference in those decks is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. So let's look at what we had at Leon.
Okay.
So looking at Leon, we have a first place deck playing red-green Eldrazi. We weren't too surprised there. Then we have four-color Abzan, mono-green Tron with a splash of black. There are three of those. Four.
One of them is actually splashing white as well.
And then an Abzan and a Jeskai Control. So we only have one, two, three decks really here. Four decks. And your top two, being the fact there were four Tron decks, was Eldrazi and Abzan. Now this is, of course, pre-unban. So no Jaces, no Bloodbraid Elves. So everybody's playing their old faithfuls, getting their last times in, and it's kind of surprising to not see humans here, surprising to not see so many other decks.
Right. And, you know, like you were talking about, we're going to get this new Modern format when Jace and Bloodbraid Elf are finally legal, starting this weekend, day after tomorrow. It has been legal on Magic Online already, so we do have a couple of decks on here that do include Jace and Bloodbraid Elf, but... one thing I really, really like is you look at Grand Prix Lyon here and you have red-green Eldrazi, Abzan, mono-green Tron. Then you look at Grand Prix Toronto from the previous week. You have Boggles, Burn, Jeskai Control, Grishul Brand, Elves. Then you go back to the Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan. You have Lantern Control, Mardu Pyromancer, Black Red Hollow One, Five Color Humans. Not only is this format incredibly diverse, but it's diverse with decks that win. You know, you can bring different decks to these tournaments and expect to win on any given day, which is just absolutely fantastic. This format is healthier than it's ever been before.
It really is. It's kind of surprising to see a format that you can just throw some modern staple cards in play and win.
Right. Right.
As long as it's not Tarmogoyf.
Tarmogoyf. Actually, it's kind of funny because there's not very many people playing with Tarmogoyf anymore. And they're still commanding a very expensive price tag.
Yes, right. Well, here's where it kind of turns into a rock, paper, scissors format. With the introduction of Jace the Mind Sculptor, we may see a resurgence of Lightning Bolt. Because currently, Fatal Push has been the most played, or probably one of the most played removal cards in Modern.
Definitely. Because
it deals with all of these creatures. Now, with the introduction of Jace, Fatal Push does nothing against Jace.
No,
however, Lightning Bolt does do something against Jace. So if you were to see a shift, and more people were running Lightning Bolt, guess what card gets better?
Tarmogoyf! You know another card gets better?
What's another card that gets better?
Death Shadow.
Death Shadow, sure. Now, we're not saying that Fatal Push will just go away. Absolutely not. That card is way too powerful. But you're going to get to see a lot more Lightning Bolts floating around Modern, especially with Blood Raid Elf. I mean, cascading into a Lightning Bolt seems pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but now that we're starting to talk about Jason Blood Raid Elf, guys, I think I'm in love. I found a deck that I think I can just run off and be happy with for the rest of my life.
Is it Black Red Hollow One?
No. The very first, here on TCG Player, we look at the latest 20 modern decks, and the top deck, the newest, is called Sultai the Rock. Now let me just walk you through this 60 cards of absolute ecstasy here. You have 4 Dark Confidant, 4 Scavenging Ooze, 4 Tarmogoyf, 2 Vendilion Click. Then you're running 3 Jace the Mind Sculptor, 4 Liliana of the Veil, 2 Abrupt Decay, 1 Dismember, 4 Fatal Push, 2 Inquisition of Kozilek, 2 Maelstrom Pulse, and 4 Thoughtseize. I mean, this is everything I've ever wanted in a Magic deck. I love Sultai.
Is it just so fluffy?
It is. It really is. I mean, and you got, I mean, it does have a teeny, teeny, tiny bit of red because you've got the Fulminator Mages in the sideboard.
Yeah.
But it has, and speaking of the sideboard, it's running Collector Brutality, Damnation, Fulminator Mage, Liliana, The Last Hope, Negates, and Nile Spell Bombs. This is poetry.
I must
make this deck.
Then make it. Do you see the Super Secret Tech in the land base, though?
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I'm still staring at these Lilianas and Jaces here. Tell me about the secret tech in these lands.
It's called Creeping Tar Pit.
Ooh, that is a good one.
Because that is just like a recurrable Lightning Bolt for 3/4.
Yep. Unblockable. Unsweepable, because a lot of the sweepers in the format are sorcery speed. So, very, very, very good card.
Now, I mean, of course... Fatal Push and Lightning Bolt still kills this card, but
it gets in there and deals with the Jace.
Or right. Your Liliana of the Veil.
Well, you also have like cards like Abrupt Decay, Dismember, Fatal Push, they all don't kill Jace, but that's why you've got the 2 Maelstrom Pulses and the 4 Thoughtseizes. You know, Inquisition doesn't even hit Jace either, but if you're gonna battle against Jace, if you're playing with Jace, you better be ready to play against him too. And so, yeah, this just seems... I don't know.
I'd give it a couple weeks. Allow the hype to get down. We got to see what's next. But I can't blame you. I mean, it's good to look at these decks. There's so much out there now. I mean, looking at the competitive modern league for the past week, I don't see a lot of Jaces, I don't see a lot of Bloodbraid Elves, but I do see almost a complete list of different decks. I mean,
yes,
Pyromancers, Goryeo's Vengeance, Scapeshifts, Blue Red Kiki Moon. There's so much good here, it's mm-hmm. hard to say this is bad.
Yeah. Well, let's click over here to the MTGO Competitive Modern League at the top of, what was it here? The 19th through the 25th. So we see a lot of familiar decks up here, but you did mention one that looks very interesting. I think it's shown up before, but let's dive into this Martyr Proc deck a little bit. It seems very, very exciting. So
Andrew, you want to talk about this deck?
Yeah.
So what this deck is doing, you're basically trying to get as much value from Serra Ascendance as possible, which, yeah, it's hard to get up to that life total, but you go back to Martyr of Sands, which was definitely a card at its time, didn't do all that much for you, but when you look at what it can do now, especially matched up with two different forms of searching your deck for cards to be able to reveal to be able to gain life, it's going to do a lot of work for you. Between Ranger, Vios, and Squadron Hawk, you're going to keep a pretty healthy number of white cards in your hand. So when you do actually use your Martyr of Sands, you're going to be gaining quite a bit of life and putting yourself pretty far out of range for a lot of decks for a long period of time. And when you look at the variety of Planeswalker support that they have behind them, it's one of those decks that you can just stand back and wait three or four turns, because when you're gaining 15 life at a time, you may not really care about what they're turning sideways at you.
Right.
And then I think it's kind of funny looking at this deck, seeing that Gideon of the Trials pop up, which if you remember, there was a Tribal Gideon deck that focused on getting that Gideon emblem from the Trials and just keeping a Gideon out there when you feel like you're going to die so you don't. And it gives this deck some extra leg space to run around and really get in there and just beat up an opponent with those Serra's Ascendants.
Right. And, you know, looking at this Ranger of Eos here, this seems like the number one star of this deck, because between the Martyr of Sands, Serra Ascendant, and Thraben Inspector, which will draw you cards, and you get to get two creatures, it seems just incredibly powerful. And it is running a little bit of recursion here. It's running a Proclamation of Rebirth, which, for those of you who might not know, for two and a white, you get a sorcery that says return up to three target creature cards with converted mana cost one or less from your graveyard to play. So if you're getting those Thraben Inspectors out there to draw you cards and block and go to the graveyard, and then you get your Serra Ascendant out early, maybe it gains you a little bit of life, but then it gets bolted. And then a Martyr of Sands to start you on that life gain train, but it gets maybe, you know, Sweltering Suns away. Then, is that a word? Sweltering Suns away?
It gets sweltered.
There you go. It's sweating profusely. But yeah, Proclamation of Rebirth can return three of those creatures to the battlefield. You know, and Thraben Inspector obviously gets you that clue upon entering. And then, Andrew, you actually pointed out a great interaction between Squadron Hawk and Martyr of Sands. You mentioned that with Squadron Hawk entering the battlefield, actually, you go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, when Squadron Hawk enters the battlefield, you're able to search your deck for up to three additional more Squadron Hawks and add them to your hand. So with Martyr of Sands, you just have more white cards in your hand that you're able to go with.
Yeah, I also want
to touch up when you're talking about Proclamation of Rebirth. With this deck, without actually seeing how games were played, having Forecast be available, if you really are just a late game deck, you're able to just keep on pumping out creatures from your graveyard and just keep that Proclamation in your hand.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yeah, I didn't even look at the land base here. Because, yeah, when you're doing a Myriad of the Sky Ruin and you can get back one of the Ranger of Eos and just keep going to town, this is an engine that is seriously going to hum and get you that life that you need to really go off with those Serra Ascendants.
Now, do you notice that there in the sideboard it's got Crucible of Worlds along with Ghost Quarters and Field of Ruin?
Yes. Oh, man. You know, Field of Ruin has been an absolute breakout all-star in modern, if I might say so myself. Like, it's absolutely insane just to see how many of these modern decks aren't playing many basics. And if you're running Crucible of Worlds, you can essentially start locking people out by just destroying their lands, replaying your field. All the while, you go get to get more basics of your own. And this deck's running 14 planes. That's huge.
Yeah.
It's also running a Wrath of God.
It is.
To make everyone cry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like this deck. It looks like fun. I'd play this deck. Especially for $400.
Oh my gosh. Considering that Soul Tie list I was looking at was around $2,500. Yeah, man. I'll take this budget. This looks pretty competitive, too. I like it.
A pair of Stony Silences, Rule of Law against Storm.
Yeah. No, this deck looks like a ton of fun. That Archangel Avacyn in the board just to get you when you're least expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. Well, gentlemen, we're coming up against it here in terms of time, so we're going to wind it on down. And not before we let you guys know one more time that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming. Head to flipsidegaming.com. Be sure to order all of your singles, sealed product that are Magic or other game related. And any order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION. Save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. All right. I'm going to give it away here, or at least a little hint. I have behind me some sealed Commander decks from many printings ago. Not the most recent, but a couple printings ago. So what I thought we would do is crack it open and give away several singles within this deck away to people who wish to enter our giveaway. We haven't determined how many we want to give away yet. It will be quite a few. And then we'll probably be giving away that oversized foil in front as well. So go ahead and look forward to that. We absolutely love you guys' interactions. You know, anytime you guys enter, it feels great. It makes us want to keep doing these giveaways. So
it does.
Thank you all for your participation. And thank you, Andrew, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Absolutely. And Greg, thanks again. Getting way ahead of myself. Andrew, where can people find you if they want to talk to you about,
you know
Martyr of Sands decks?
Social media presence?
I have no social media presence, and I am very happy with it that way.
Wow, he is a ghost.
If
holy
you've got
holy
questions,
all right.
Of course, you could ask me or Sean, and we'll be able to relay that to Andrew.
There you go. There you go. All right, Greg, where can these people find you?
You can find me at NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
And you can find me at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. Follow us on... Follow us on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. Check out our YouTube page. And we will be streaming some more games here soon on our Twitch channel. So, all that being said... Thanks again, and we will talk to y'all next week.
Have a good night, guys.